creating and rekindling memories. NHR.
Let's go on to the Nottingham Playhouse to find out all about a play that's happening there until the 15th of November. The play is called Eureka Day. And one of the stars of the play is Kirsty Ryder. So we'll find out a little bit more about Kirsty as well. Hello, Kirsty. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's an absolute pleasure. Now then, before we get on to Eureka Day, let's find out a little bit about you. When did the acting bug bite? How did you get into acting?
Oh, that's an interesting question. Someone hasn't asked me that in a long time. So I actually did a TV show when I was very young. So I was about 10 years old. They were looking for a specific demographic of 10-year-old child, and they were looking in London and couldn't find someone. So they spread it wider. I was living in South Cambridgeshire at the time. And so I got the part of this TV show, and I did like 30 episodes of that when I was 10. And I think, to be honest, at that point I was like, yep, this is what I want to do. Yeah. But then I went to school, I did sick form, I trained at drama school, and then I didn't work professionally again until I came out of drama school. So yeah, I think probably around that age as a kid, I was like, this is it, I think.
I know that you do a lot of writing as well.
Yes.
You've written films and scripts and stuff like that. I mean, how does that compare with sort of being on stage or being in films and stuff like that? Do you find it easier, or is it a little bit more stressful?
Yeah, it's interesting. It's a very solo sport, writing.
Yeah.
You're doing it on your own. You're motivating yourself. You have to get up and make your deadlines, and you don't get to go into the theatre and rehearse with other people and make something together. So in that sense, that is a difficult aspect of it, because it all is down to you. And if things aren't going well, that is also on you as well. So I think that side of it is hard. But in terms of creativity, I find it very expansive and very freeing, because you create the whole world, you create all the characters, you get to decide the meaning and the themes of what you're writing and what you want to say. And so I think they go hand in hand really well. There's a lot of transferable skills that I learn as an actor that I can bring to my writing, and that I know as a writer that I can bring to my acting. So I think they're quite different in how they come out in the world and your process of developing your writing versus developing your acting. But I think the skills of like empathy and listening and caring about the world and being curious, I think those are helpful to have for both acting and writing.
Do you think with having the writing background, it probably makes you a better actor, and vice versa, because of the understanding?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So I started as an actor, and I didn't really start writing. So the writing bug got me in when I was at drama school. I'm dyslexic, and I think that always kind of, in my mind, was a barrier to being able to see myself as a writer. But we did a lot of writing at drama school, mostly writing for ourselves to act in. And then I was like, wow, I love this side of it. So I think, because as an actor you read so many plays, or you read so many TV scripts or so many film scripts that you audition for, you kind of get in the practice of reading good characters, good structure, and that definitely helps me as a writer as well. So yeah, I think for sure the skills that you need as a writer will definitely help you as an actor, and vice versa.
Now then, I've already apologised for this, but it's sort of something that the younger people, maybe the gamers of the listening world, might recognise you from. Clair Obscura. For people like me, dinosaurs like myself, tell us what Clair Obscura is.
Yeah, Clair Obscura Expedition 33 is the full title of the video game. It's a video game. It's an RPG, which is a role player game. It came out, I think, in April this year, so it's still pretty new.
Maybe, yeah.
I play a character called Lune, I don't want to give any spoilers in case people... but basically, the premise of the game is there are these expeditions every year. There's this paintress woman, mysterious paintress woman, who writes a number on a big stone every year, starting from 100. And everyone of that age and above immediately disappears on that day. Uh-oh. And so they've gone, every year they've gone down from 100 and now they're at 33. And so the expedition is that in your final year of life, you give, you volunteer your last year to try and figure out who this Paintress woman is and why she's killing our world. And so, yeah, the expedition is going out to find, to try and destroy this woman so that we don't keep dying and disappearing. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. To keep civilization. So that's the very brief concept of the video game. But I think and the game's done amazingly well, which is so exciting. The team behind it, I don't know how much you know about the video game world. I knew very little.
No, next to nothing.
Yeah. But the I guess with all industries, like the film industry as well, there's big corporations who have the money and resources to make films and TV shows. And then there are the smaller independent, the kind of David of the Goliaths in the world. And this video game was created by one of those very small independent production companies. It's their first game. Many of the people who made this game, it was their first ever game. So I think people are really behind the game itself because they love the game, but also the team who made the game are like very, very passionate. And I think that's what has brought the joy and love out of the game and for the game as well.
So gamers out there, check out Clear Obscura.
Expedition 33.
There yeah. you go. And then you can hear Kirsty in that as well. Now, talking about, I mean, that is, I imagine, more of a voice acting
yes.
thing, isn't it? So, which is something that you're really into as well. And audiobooks.
Yeah.
I love a good audiobook as well. I mean, how easy is it for you? Because it's all sort of transference of acting skills, yeah. isn't it? So, but it's all coming through your voice. How easy do you find recording audiobooks?
Oh, yeah. Again, it is very different because I think when you're acting on screen or on the stage, the main premise of that type of acting is being open and listening to the other person, the other characters, and responding truthfully to them. Whereas when you're doing an audiobook or a video game, it's just you in the booth on your own. You might be, so for the video game, for instance, I'm acting out scenes, but no one else is there. So I'm imagining their lines and I'm imagining what it would be like to be in this space. So I think it's acting is an imaginative exercise. But I think when you're doing voice acting, there's many different aspects of imagination that you're drawing on. And I also think it's very exposing when you just, you know, when you see something visually as well as audio, there's a lot of things that you're processing. Whereas when you're listening to an audiobook, you're just using your ears. And I mean, it's a full sensory experience, but I think we then can be more critical to whether we believe a voice, is my personal opinion. So I find it, it's a good barometer of truth, voice acting. You have to really do your best, most honest acting, because I think the ear can hear when you're not being honest.
I'd suppose with saying that as well, you've got to convey sort of every motion and everything just through the voice, whereas if you're on stage, you've got the physicality of it, haven't you? You know, sort of facial expressions about how you feel, but it's all got to come through the voice, hasn't
yes,
it?
Yes, yes. I also think it's quite a joyful experience as an actor because you can play, you know, your voice can hide or can convey a multitude of different characters in a way that yeah. you can't necessarily do when your physical form is being seen. So that's always very fun with voice acting, is that you can play like a 10-year-old child if you can voice it well, or an 80-year-old woman or whatever it is. So that I love that side of it. And also with audiobook, I did, it was called The Earthquake Bird for Audible. And I was voicing all of the characters, many of which were Japanese policemen, a woman from Yorkshire, woman from Japan. So it was a lot of different accents in that audiobook, which was very fun as well to do.
I imagine as well that you can just sit there in your onesie and a cup of coffee or a cup of tea, can't you? Whereas you can't do that on stage.
And no, people will know.
Well, exactly, yeah. So I suppose it's nice and comfortable. Maybe that's not the right word, but... Yeah, we'll leave it at that. One thing that I do know you from, though, is Call the Midwife. I love Call the Midwife. And I can remember that scene with you on the Ferris wheel.
Yes. Oh, that's so nice. There.
And I mean, how cold was that scene? Because you were right at the top of that wheel.
Yeah, I know. And we were filming at 1 a.m. I think that was like 1 a.m. I think they were, because they needed to go dark. And I think it was it summer or, yeah, maybe it was just the end of summer. So they had to wait really late before we could film that scene. Obviously, because it had to be Christmas, so it had to be dark and cozy, and yeah. So I mean, they wrapped us up. I think they put little heat packs in our shoes and stuff to keep us warm. But it was an experience, and we were very much at the top of the Ferris wheel for that scene. So yeah, they were. I remember when before I got the part, I think the casting director called my agent and was like, just checking, is Kirsty afraid of heights? just to make sure, because otherwise I wouldn't have got the part, I think, if I was afraid of heights.
Yeah, I think it might have helped with with that. I mean, same as, I mean, some people I've spoken to, and you know, they've said they put all sorts of stuff on their CV, like they can ride horses and they can't, and you know, then they get a job sort of riding horses and stuff like that. So
you can get stuck with those lies.
Yes, yeah. So let's talk about Eureka Day.
It's
from what I've read, and I've tried not to read too much because I come and see it, see what it's like. It looks hilarious from the sort of the things that we've seen on the Nottingham Playhouse website and the Facebook site. So tell us a little bit about what Eureka Day is all about.
So Eureka Day is set in a small private school in Berkeley, California, and the school is kind of created under principles of racial justice and progressive politics, I guess, being a very intentional community. So a lot of quite wealthy parents, but also parents who care about these types of messagings that their children are growing up with. It follows this executive committee of this school of mostly parents, but also the head teacher, who it's their job to kind of navigate different hurdles that the school might come across. And so we follow this executive committee on this very particular day when there is a mumps outbreak. And it follows the executive committee as they try and decide how best to navigate an outbreak and vaccines and vaccine recommendations and how to stop the spread. And it's a very interesting exploration of how this very well-meaning community can suddenly, cracks start to show when things like health and big pharma and medical advice kind of seep into the political ideologies of all of the characters in the play.
Your role is, and I hope I've got this right, is it Miko?
Mako. Yeah.
And that's quite a major role in this, isn't it? Because it's Mako's daughter who actually kicks everything off.
Well, she's one of the first. She is one of the first children to get mumps. She's not the first.
Yes, because without giving too much away, she contracts it.
Yes, she does. She does, yeah. Yes, it is a major role. Mako has a very interesting arc throughout the play. She's someone who thinks very deeply about the decisions that she makes and what she personally chooses to consume in terms of like food, but also medical help. And she's very particular about that with her daughter as well. And she starts the play with one very strong opinion, although she's quite open to hearing other opinions. And she goes on a long and roller coaster journey throughout the play where her position on certain things is really pushed to its limits.
I suppose people who come and see this play, they, again, same as Mako, they might sort of believe in one thing with vaccination. Because, I mean, it's a big thing, really, isn't it? With, you know, sort of, do I vaccinate, do I not vaccinate? Yes. And where you stand on that. And people might come in sort of thinking, oh, no, yeah, not into vaccination and everything. And then it may just turn their mind over a little bit.
Yes, I think what the play does brilliantly, Jonathan Spector, the writer, he doesn't, he doesn't make it clear at all what his opinion is. Sometimes you might see a play or a show or whatever, and there's a very clear agenda that's being pushed. And I think what's brilliant about that this play is that he doesn't do that. He looks at an array of different opinions and really examines why it is these people believe what they believe. And I think just as you start to think you know a character and you've got their... You figured out how they work. There's twists where you suddenly other things are revealed, and maybe the judgments, the strong judgments you might have for certain characters, are suddenly turned on its head, which is very exciting. And I think that happens really for all of the characters throughout the play, which is such a well crafted play in that regard.
It's nice that a writer will actually, if you like, leave the decision of the people who come to see the play to themselves, and yes, as you say, not try and push one point or the other point.
Yes.
And I can imagine that people are going to be leaving at the end with a real talking point.
Definitely. I think this is, I mean, that's one of the things people say about British theatre. What's so exciting about British theatre is that we love to see a play and then discuss it afterwards.
Yeah.
And it's not so much a culture in other places. There are some as well, of course, but that's a big joy about British theatre, is that we come with our friends and we debate it in the pub or whatever after. And I think this is definitely one of those plays which will start conversations. And I think a really great challenge for anyone who, I don't know, potentially has had friends or family who have differing opinions to them. And it's a play that really calls on people's empathy and understanding, whatever your opinions are, wherever you stand. It's been great for me personally and everyone in the room to kind of really think about, why do these people believe these things? And why do these people believe the opposite thing so passionately? So it's great for that.
Now, I mentioned right at the beginning that it is a comedy.
It is a comedy,
And from what we've discussed, it sounds quite serious.
Yes.
But from your point of view...
Yes.
What in the play brings out most of the comedy for you?
I think the characters, as a starting point, they all are so well-meaning and they're trying so hard. And I think there's something very funny about, particularly, I think we understand this as Brits as well, is we know the delicacies of trying not to offend each other and sometimes failing miserably.
We're all too polite, aren't we?
Yeah, we are polite, exactly. And I think there's something very British about, even though it's set in California, it's a very Californian school and world, I think there's something very British humour around watching people try to delicately walk on eggshells around each other and just like smashing around the place and accidentally putting things on. But there's also an honestly fantastic scene like quite early on in the play, which is absolutely hilarious. I don't want to give too much away. You'll just have to come and see it. But it is genuinely genius. It is geniusly funny. Anyone who's ever been on a committee, a team, or a parent-teacher team, what are they called?
PTAs.
Anyone who's ever had anything like that, I think, will find this hilarious. And anyone who's had Zoom calls and that, which I think at this point probably we've all been there. It has some hilarious scenes around those worlds.
And I think as well, with it sort of involving kids as well, and, you know, sort of, as we said, do we vaccinate, do we not vaccinate our kids? Again, that brings in another level of comedy, I think, because people are going to be, they're going to be standing up for themselves and the kids and everything, and they're going to come up against people who don't quite agree. And it's those clashes, I imagine, are going to be quite comical from the outsider.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. I think any time it's a question of kids, that a parent's kids, things can get impassioned, let's say.
Definitely. Yeah.
So, yeah, I think one for Edgeworth kids as well. I'm sure there's a lot of humour for parents in here as well. Yeah.
Brilliant. I, for one, am definitely looking forward to it. It's going to be at the Nottingham Playhouse until Saturday, the 15th of November. And it's the regional premiere isn't it?
And it was hard won. I think this play is so loved. So, that's a big thing. It's very exciting that we get to do it here.
Brilliant. And it's lovely to see you. And I will see you on stage along with the rest of the cast. As I said, at the Nottingham Playhouse until the 15th of November. Get your tickets. It's going to be an absolutely brilliant piece of theatre. Kirsty, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Did you know that Nottingham Hospital Radio is a registered charity? As a result, we rely on people like you to donate to it. All our members are committed volunteers who run the service for the benefit and entertainment of the patients in the Queen's Medical Centre and City Hospitals. Research has shown that listening to hospital radio can positively benefit a patient's recovery, and we think it's a very worthwhile thing to do. Donating to NHR is easy and rewarding, so please log on to nhradio.org.uk and go to the donate page. That's nhradio.org.uk/donate. You'll be glad you did, and thank you.